right, it's another Monday night, and you are in the zone here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Dave and Glass again with you on another Monday night, and we are, as always, taking your phone calls at 333-2665 with you until 745, where we take you and turn you over to Monday Night Football, Ravens at Browns. Tonight, it's kicking off just after 8:30. But in the meantime, plenty to talk about tonight as the Hoosier basketball team went to Maui and came back 1-2. So clearly disappointing for pretty much every fan's expectations of what might happen in Maui. They have Alcorn State tonight at 7 o'clock on BTN. We'll talk a little bit more about their trip to Maui and what's going on in the Alcorn State game at the top of the next hour. But it's football here in the first hour as the Colts go they host a home game this weekend and successful turning things around here with Matt Hasselbeck. It's been an up and down season, certainly beat Denver. Now they come back here and win on the weekend against and help me out here. What have I done? My brain is lost.
What are you doing, playing Tampa Bay?
Tampa, thank you. Jameis Winston, I completely forgot. We'll talk about the Colts here in a little while once I figure out just who they played this weekend and who they got next weekend. It's Sunday night. I do know that. But first, the best news of all over the weekend came on Saturday about 3:30 when the Hoosiers finally polished off the Purdue Boilermakers' third straight year to claim the bucket. Bringing it home the first time since 1947 that the Hoosiers had won three straight bucket games. And at least as importantly is the fact that that makes them 6-6 with winners of their last two games, both of which on the road. They are now bowl eligible, and now everything just has to sort out to see where they go. So it's all over now, but the deciding who goes where and the picking of the teams. But Glass, this team this year we thought was good enough to at least get to 500. It's a tough schedule. We knew that going in, certainly in the Big Ten and in the Big Ten East. And when they had to come down to going on the road twice in the last 2 weeks of the season to get to 6-6, we knew we'd find out a lot about what this team was really made of, and I think we found that out because while their defense had struggles offensively and defensively, they came up with plays when they needed to get plays, showed a lot of guts on the road, two games in a row in the Big Ten. And, you know, I don't know that they're flying at the end of this season, but certainly they're feeling pretty darn good about what they were able to accomplish in what are two tougher, I think, trips than people give those two credit for this team.
As we mentioned, the schedule maker couldn't have made it any better for finishing up. If you needed to win two games, those were the two teams you wanted to play the final 2 weeks. But the fact was Indiana won both those games without their best running back, Jordan Howard. That's a fact. The other fact is they scored 101 points on the road in two must-win games. And no matter how you split 101, Dave, you want to split it, 80%, 20%, 75-25, 50-50, you're giving yourself a really, really good chance to win twice. And it's always been about the offense for this team. And, again, Howard goes out in the first series against Maryland, so he's done for that game. Devine Redding pops in with the career-high 130 and change rushing, beats that in three quarters against Purdue this weekend. The system works, folks. And I think that's what you wanted to see when the year started. We both sat here and told you they'd go 6-6. We're not patting ourselves in the back. The schedule didn't met out anything else. It would have been nice to steal one, quote unquote, against Ohio State, Michigan State, or Iowa.
Yeah,
that would have been great.
Not a fair
would
ask.
Have been nice to be completely healthy at Penn State, because when Nate Sudfeld's been the quarterback, Indiana has not had problems scoring points or playing with big time teams. But we knew the key to this year's team would be, how do you replace Tevin Coleman? And you thought you had a good handle on that with Jordan Howard. You did. The key when training camp broke to get ready for the August camp, to get you ready for the season, it was offensive line. They had no injuries on that front. Again, when those things happen and you have good players, or when you think they're going to perform and they do end up performing, you got a lucky break there. You didn't have any critical injuries besides Sudfeld missing, what, six quarters in that? Mm-hmm. Still found a way to set the IU record in 25 starts for the most passing yards. It was pretty good. So a very happy time in Hoosier camp, no doubt about it. And I don't think they did any of this with smoke and mirrors. I don't think this was a pull out all the stops, it's year five, we have to do this or the coach is going to lose his job type things. Their offense works. Their defense was marginally better. You saw the stats when the Purdue game started. They were 14th, 13th, 14th, and 13th in scoring, rushing, passing, and total. So it wasn't better in the sense that it was statistically better, it made enough plays to win ball games. It stripped enough players on goal lines to change momentums, made enough interceptions to keep Indiana in and around some of those victories, and they did enough to get to 6-6. Is the program headed in the right direction? I think when you look back at the year, you can point out some really bad situations or silly situations like the Rutgers game. You can point out some very good ones like the Michigan game or the Ohio State game, where in the second half you went toe-to-toe with a really good team with your backup quarterback. There's enough stuff there to show you this wasn't a phony result. This wasn't some new offense they installed in the last week and all of a sudden it clicked and you got lucky and you played two teams that weren't doing very well. No, I don't think that's the case. I think it has worked. I think after the completion of the fifth year of regular season football, you can see this is moving in the right direction, because you didn't have the wide receiving core maybe you had a couple years ago. You didn't maybe have Tevin Coleman. You maybe didn't have the defense in these pieces. You had guys dropping balls and still scoring 50 points. You had guys, again, not making all the right plays defensively, but you were still winning games when you had to win games at the end. And that's what it's all about. Nobody's going to look back at the season in 10 years, 5 years, or 15 years and go, well, you remember when they blew it against Rutgers? You remember that play call at the goal line against Michigan where they could have? You're not going to say that anymore. You're going to say this is the first time Indiana's been to a bowl since 2007 and the second time they've been to a bowl since, what, 1994, 93, yeah, whatever it's been. So 22 years, that's what you're going to remember. So for Kevin Wilson and his staff to hold it together, there are many times this team could have mailed it in and said, it's done. We're not dealing with it. He told you all year long he loved the seniors. He thought that they were providing great leadership on and off the field, holding this together, holding people accountable, and the proof is in the pudding of results. Sorry it's not 7-5. Sorry it's not 8-4. Sorry it's not 9-3. But 6-6 and going to a bowl for the first time in 8 years is fine by me.
333-2665 is our phone number. Obviously, nobody knows what the next couple years might hold, but I think everybody expects at this point an extension for Kevin Wilson. And at the very least, you can see the depth on this team that is starting to build. And, you know, you might not see it on the back end of the defense and say, wow, they're fantastic just yet. But what they are is extremely young. They've got a lot of guys now that have experience playing in those games. But more importantly, I think, is towards the end of the season, as Glass mentioned, losing some playmakers to this team, really not having what I would call, quote unquote, exciting, or if you want to use a different term, you know, pro type prospects at the wide receiver position. Really only one pro prospect in the backfield other than Nate Sudfeld in Jordan Howard, and he was in and out of the lineup to put up the numbers that they did, and more importantly to me, to play the way they did in the last two games. The last couple of years under Kevin Wilson, and really the whole time, this has been a gambling offense and defense. It has been a team that takes chances, and quite frankly, it's been a team that shot itself in the foot a lot of times. And you know, that's not necessarily to blame anyone for that, but it is. It's a team that made big mistakes in some big spots and couldn't get past them. But in two stumble-worthy games where they had chances to just kind of blow it and not pull through, they pulled through and did it in a great way, and they did it in dramatic fashion. Yes, they did get down 21 to Maryland. Yes, they did give up a couple scores when you would have liked them to see them cemented against Purdue.
They're not perfect.
But they're not perfect, and Nate Sudfeld just went for 350 yards for the last two games.
10 touchdowns.
Eight touchdowns and two interceptions. I mean, so
and he, two rushing touchdowns.
Yeah, exactly. So, he was probably as good as he's ever been at Indiana in the last two games on the road when they needed him to carry them
and, that's the
and to
thing.
Be the best player on the field, and he was.
And they had one road game heading into the season in the Big Ten in his tenure. One game. And they had to win two to close the tenure.
Yeah.
They haven't won three road games in the Big Ten or in a season, period, since 1994.
Yeah.
Three road wins.
It's
any way you count it,
it's
folks,
a big time
you can only
finish.
Play who's right in front of you.
And look, they're 6-6. They're not 10-2. We're not talking about Big Ten titles or New Year's Day bowls down in Florida. It's fine. This program had to get to bowl games to begin with. A bowl game is the minimum version of success in college football. Now they are there. They can sell that even further.
And it's not 5-7. It's 6-6. They have a chance for a winning season.
It qualified. We all want the Big Ten championship. We'd all love that to happen. But you got to be realistic first. And the good news is there's a lot of good happening right now. 333-2665 is the phone number. Let's bring in John.
How's it going, John?
What's happening?
Hey, good, guys. How you doing?
Good, good. A lot happier than a lot of Mondays sitting in this chair, that's for sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. Hey, just a couple quick thoughts, or actually questions. I'm curious about your input. One, is Nate Sudfeld draftable? in your opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. That hasn't been a huge secret.
I think he's draftable. He's shown the last half, the second half of this year, and especially the last couple of games, accuracy that's imperative at the pro level. The question always becomes, what's your poise like? What's your decision-making like? And how much do you work? And I don't think there's any question he's a worker. He's not a guy like Johnny Manziel who's going to be partying all the time. So the question really at the next level is decision-making.
And he has the physical tools.
He still doesn't have a lot of starts under his belt, and I think he 25. Showed late in the season he has improved in his decision-making and the speed of that, and I think that was important to show to be a draftable quarterback.
And the other part of it was he didn't get destroyed against the best defenses in the league. He put,
up numbers
when you had to put up numbers. Now, it didn't turn into wins, but the reason Indiana lost the games to Iowa, Michigan, Michigan State wasn't because he threw four interceptions and fumbled.
Mm-hmm.
That's not why it happened. Yeah. So I think that helps him. But I joked about this on Saturday. I'm going to live in the now with Sudfeld. We'll worry about Nate when he packs it up and leaves, but he's got 15 more practices or so and another chance at another Hoosier victory to, again, cement his legacy and put it the first winning season in some time.
Absolutely. Hey, I'm not turning away from that. I guess my other question, this is going to sound a little bit odd, but
you came to the right spot.
Jordan Howard has proven himself. I know we have a pretty outstanding offensive line there, but would it be crazy with his little bits of medical issues and things of that nature, would it be crazy for him to try to go the NFL now?
No, not at all, because there's an old line about running backs. They only have X amount of carries in them, and the average lifespan of a running back in the NFL is about 2.5 years. And if that's his dream and he wants to go, remember, he put up 1,500 yards with UAB's line last year.
Yeah, I mean,
he's a good player, but is he an NFL player? That's a question that for the scouts.
Honestly, I think the NFL right now on Jordan Howard likes the idea that he missed some carries late in the season more than they wanted to see him. I mean, I think they saw plenty of him, so they didn't need to see more of what he could do. They saw enough of that. The question really becomes, is he going to be healthy long term? And I think they'll take a chance on him. I think neither one of these guys, you're talking about a top 3-round draft pick. With Sudfeld, you're probably talking middle rounds, maybe 3, 4, 5. With Howard, you might be talking 4, 5, 6, that kind of neighborhood. But I don't think it's absurd that Howard could
go. But the
go.
Question for Howard is whether he goes or whether he stays, and that'll be an interesting it's always an interesting decision because, obviously, the loyalty he has to Indiana and Indiana that has to him, it was really a match made at a perfect time. And this wasn't a kid Indiana's been recruiting since the 7th grade where you said, geez, this is such a tight relationship. So if he goes, you pat him on the back and you say thanks. And then also, I mentioned this just before you called in, John, Coach Wilson's system works because you plugged in how many backs at Purdue and you ran for 200, 300 yards.
They played five backs, four of them got carries.
Yeah, and they all had more than 30 yards. The system works, the line works. But I think Jordan Howard is talented, but at that level, I'm not sure what that talent translates into. Dave always brings up how many Wisconsin running backs run for 1,800 yards every year and 60 touchdowns, and none of them do anything in the league.
Never hear about
If he's durable enough, the things you like about his injuries, high ankle sprain, and the word is a knee problem here, which is just a cleanup deal, those aren't debilitating. He hasn't Todd Gurley'd it and torn his ACL where you say, how does he come back? How does he bounce back?
Look, he put up absurd numbers at UAB, and then he turned around and put up here.
Defenses.
Yeah, exactly. When he was actually healthy, he was putting him up against a good defense.
And when he was 80%, he was putting up 160 yards.
Exactly,
so,
right.
I think beauty is in the eye of the beholder at the next level, because how many times do the Green Bay Packers, Dallas Cowboys, you name it, bring a guy off the street you've never heard of as undrafted, or the Seattle Seahawks, and a guy goes for 175 yards. There is a market for those guys. If his family needs the cash, I don't know how that works out either. If he needs to go and get a pro contract to be on the practice squad or whatever, those are questions we'll figure out hopefully after the bowl victory.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, guys, thanks a lot.
Good questions, John. John's paying attention. That's not a surprise. He listens to this program.
Thanks for the call. We appreciate
good stuff,
it.
Man.
We do have to take a quick break, but we'll talk a little bit more Hoosier football when we get back.
It's fun to do, and almost in December, talking Hoosier football.
Big Ten Network is announcing their Offensive Players of the Year here in the current hour, if you want to get up on BTN.com leading up to the Hoosier game. Offense will be tomorrow night, but guess who has a real good chance at being the quarterback of the year? Nate Sudfeld.
If he's not in the conversation,
I'm not
sure
what's happening. Got the best numbers in the Big Ten. We'll see. Got to take that quick break. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is a phone number. Talking IU football, BTN and the Big Ten are announcing their defensive players of the year. All of these players of the year, position players of the year, and coaches and things like that have names associated with them. I'm not going through any of those suckers.
Nope.
Screw that.
Nope.
I can't remember them all, and I'm not going to try. But that said, Will Likely is your returner of the year at this point. So they're going through them slowly, which is kind of irritating and stupid. But
that's a guy you make an hour last. Dude.
That's how you do it. And they're not going to pregame Alcorn State for an hour.
Hey, they're doing live programming. I'll give them that. They're not giving you this. They are giving you, it's like the Big Ten Sports Center. They're giving you what's happening now that's important while we're here. Nate Sudfeld, second straight week. He is the co-offensive player of the week in the Big Ten after his big performance. And again, both those performances to get him player of the week in Big Ten is A, not easy.
Yes.
And number two, they're both on the road. And Ezekiel Elliott was
three road wins this year, which is big time for the Hoosiers.
1994, Dave.
That doesn't 1994. Happen. Yeah, that doesn't happen.
Last time they won three road games.
Two of which in the Big Ten. Look, we were critical. I've been critical
and
of Nate Sudfeld.
And the other
Sudfeld.
One was at a Power 5 conference. That was not a Bowling
That's
Green.
That's exactly right.
That was not a Toledo. That was not a Western Kentucky.
I've been critical of Nate Sudfeld because, quite frankly, he makes mistakes. Everybody makes mistakes, but when you're the quarterback and you're throwing it into coverage and getting it picked off for pick sixes, which a lot of quarterbacks have done.
Tony Romo.
But he had a habit for a little while there, and that habit's a strong word, but he was doing a little bit of that. And it cost the team in the last couple of years, I don't think there's any question, in some games. But he needed to show some improvement. But we also stated at the same time, coming into this year, he'd only had, I believe, 12 starts or 14 starts
in his career. He started 11 this year, finished with 25, so he had 14 starts.
So that's barely a season. And that was important, too, because what you had to realize is he had a lot of time out there on the field. But this guy, you know, he's also got less time than you would have expected a guy who's putting up the kind of numbers he's putting up.
And he's never played a whole season. So he never started a whole season.
He has still had to grow into that spot. And I think the second half of the season in particular, yes, there were a lot of losses and it's a good Big Ten teams. But in the second half of the season, he played as well as anybody else in the conference did.
And he played hurt.
I'm going to pump this guy up. He's not going to be the player of the year or the offensive player in the Big Ten. There's two other good teams. You know, Connor Cook and C.J. Beathard are going to be in the conversation. There's no question there. Jake Rudock should be. But when you talk about the quarterback, I don't think he takes a backseat to any of those guys. That quarterback, he's got 10 more touchdowns than Beathard, although he's got two more interceptions. But it's only five interceptions. He had almost 61%, 290 yards passing a game, 24 touchdowns, five interceptions.
And the other
numbers are fantastic.
And the other thing that makes Sudfeld's numbers even more fantastic to me is with the defense assembled, and it's not a knock of facts, look what their rankings are in the league. They're 13th and 14th defensively.
Best in pass efficiency also, by the way.
The defense is 13th and 14th in just about every category in the league. So he's under even more pressure not to screw it up, because if you give the other team more possessions against Indiana's defense, things probably aren't going to work out in your favor. Well, and he didn't.
And let's look at the other side of this also. Yes, he had some coverage from Jordan Howard for two-thirds of the season.
Not the last two games.
In addition, let's talk about the receiving options. They used a lot of receivers, but they've got Simi Cobbs is one of the top guys in receptions per game, and they've got Simi Cobbs and Ricky Jones in yardage per game. But these are not big, huge, you know, playmakers out there. Mitchell Page is a former walk-on. They did not put out there a whole bunch of great pro-type prospects like some of these schools do, and especially what we did a couple years ago. He did it this year with a bunch of guys that honestly expected to be rotation players at best.
Tight ends got hurt. Didn't throw a lot to the backside of the backfield either. But three guys over 500 yards. You spread it around. You got a bunch of backs that can do a little damage. You had tight end injury problems as well. And with Indiana, the other uninflated part of those numbers, you're not down 28-3 in the third quarter where you have to throw 60 times a game and you pump up all those numbers.
Right.
Those numbers were
They've
done
in the games.
Within the scope of the offense where you knew if you had balance, it could really help out. And we'll talk about the Colts a little bit later. Why did the Colts run the ball all day yesterday and get no yards? Well, because play action pass works, baby.
Yes, it
and
does.
And if you can balance it up, balance doesn't mean being successful on either side. It helps
it's
when
running.
It does.
It's
you still
calls.
Have to commit to it. And that's what Indiana did, the dual threat. And you saw what it looked like when it works. And we talked about that before the season started. Just 1 year, if we could just see just 12 games.
Well, they didn't get the health we asked for.
They were they did on the offensive line.
We got it on the line, and we got it with
the
quarterback for the most part.
And you didn't, again, you didn't in the defensive secondary.
We got enough.
At running back for a handful of games.
Think of how bad our receivers could have been
a quarter
if we had injuries there otherwise.
Yeah, Jayshon Harris missed the whole season, so you had a kid that played.
333-2665 is our phone number. Let's bring in John.
What's
happening, John?
Happy holiday, guys.
Happy holidays to you.
Listen, I got two questions, and my uncle asked me one at Thanksgiving. I didn't have an answer for it. I said, I'll find out from a guy I consider an expert, because, Dave, I think you have a lot of acumen, because being around your dad and all that, I think you know this kind of stuff better than most people would. Kevin Wilson changed the defensive structure in the secondary around in this spring, and instead of having a cornerbacks coach for the cornerbacks and a safety for the safeties, he kind of melded them together.
And how did that work?
Number one, is that common or more common than not? And two, do you think that led to the discombobulation in the secondary this year? Because this was the worst secondary play I've seen watching Indiana play since 1959.
We weren't any good back there a couple years ago. The problem a couple
they
years
were worse
ago,
this year.
Yeah, the problem a couple years ago was that they didn't have the athletes. Now they've got athletes who are just young and beat up.
2 years ago, they had fourth year seniors, fifth year
making
seniors,
mistakes, missing tackles,
couldn't
doing
tackle
all kinds
guys.
Of, and up front, they weren't as good. This group had a better group up front. I think the first thing you have to say about the defensive secondary before you get to the coaching side of it is they went through a lot of guys and they played at least six true freshmen in their defensive
Kevin
backfield.
Kevin Wilson said after the game on
that's
Saturday.
That's absolutely absurd.
He's had six defensive backs out.
Yeah, it's really
not good.
It's not real fair to get crazy about it. That said, when they were at their healthiest, they were still having problems back there. It's not usual, and I can't say it's not normal, but it's not usual for teams to have co-defensive backfield coaches that do everything. It's not the first time it's ever happened, but I think most guys
exception to the rule more often.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, because you really do. You have different responsibilities whether you're playing man coverage or whether you're covering half the field back
there.
And especially with the run fills for the safeties. I think you have to ask the question, did making that happen cause confusion in the backfield among guys that didn't need confusion? They needed to be as simple as possible this year because of the youth they were going with, and they probably discombobulated themselves a little bit. I'd be surprised if they don't go back to the individual positions. I think they might have outthought themselves that way, but they were looking for answers to something that was already a problem.
Yeah,
I mean,
why
it was
not?
Already a problem, so I get why they're trying to change it.
And the other thing you can never fix is experience, John, and now going forward, these kids that are all redshirt sophomores and redshirt freshmen and true freshmen, you hope in 2 years that they're all healthy and you've got a gluttony of competition throughout practice, competition in the spring.
It's not normal, John, but it's happened before, and I would prefer they go back to the individuals.
And some places do it as well, too, if pay grades are different. If you got co-something, maybe they get a little bit more money or something like that. So there is some devil in the details of all that. But what you saw, as bad as some of the situational play was, in my opinion, John, you saw athletes making bad plays. You didn't see guys that were old
and
baseball players
making bad plays the same plays.
You didn't see Donnell Jones back there getting run by tight ends and things like that.
No, these are better athletes than we saw a few years ago. The problem is they were freshmen. They were out of position because they were confused to some degree. Now, some of that is being a freshman.
Well, and the other part of it, too, let's be fair. They're pretty good coaches in the Big Ten. Guys know what they're doing. They got staffs of 400 people.
They know how to take
advantage
of it.
They know how to take
advantage
of it.
How many times do I talk about a freshman safety?
Well, that's the whole thing. Maybe you get away with that a little bit against a Western Kentucky. Maybe you get away with it a lot against a Southern
Rashard
Illinois.
Rashard Fant led the nation in pass breakups. He's a good cornerback, but when you're a cornerback, even a good cornerback, people have to throw at you occasionally, and
Tim
you're going to get a playmate.
Right in that
you.
Same conversation
so
as well.
So from that standpoint, that's not the bad play or bad
it's
coaching
not.
Necessarily.
It's bad tackling angles.
I would like to see them go back to a corner and a safety coach and just keep it simplistic like that, because they are different positions. And this year you can't point to it and say, hey, that worked. You can't.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of other reasons probably,
right,
but
right.
It didn't work.
And the other
losing Antonio Allen, which is nobody's fault, but Antonio Allen's fault.
Right? That really hurt. He was
there.
Their best defensive player coming back.
But they just made the same mistakes over and over and over again. You'd think at some point they would actually start to learn something.
Well, I will let you get to the other question, but I think there's something that those mistakes over and over again, they were different mistakes because they were put in different scenarios, because I think the coaching in the Big Ten figured it out. Said, hey, if this guy's over here doing this, run at him this way, because every time on film we see him, he doesn't do this the proper way. So it looked like getting beat, but there are different ways to get beat.
Sure.
Sometimes
they were getting beat all over the place.
They
okay,
were.
Here's the other question.
And a lot of it, too, was over-helping. Guys were trying to cheat up on the run. Guys were trying to help out where they shouldn't be helping
trying
out.
Trying to play high school.
And they, exactly. they thought they were the fastest guy in the field. That's right.
I don't expect them to be a shutdown defense. I don't think Indiana ever has that. I just want to see them get to the point where they actually can be a confident defense, because their offense will carry them if they can do that.
Hey, get back
here's
to
the
turnovers
question,
I had the first few games.
Here's the other question real quick. How many years of extension do you think Kevin Wilson should get? Because I've heard some people saying that they don't think he should deserve an extension because he just went 6-6, which I think is crazy. I think you've got to give him a couple of years to so he can start to recruit that he's going to be here when they're here.
There are plenty of people around here that think Indiana football is like every other big job out there and should be treated as such. In which case, 6-6 would not be a stunning confidence building season for people. But I continue to maintain that Indiana football is not like everybody else. Just go look at the history. I've spent way too much time looking at the history of Indiana football. Trust me, it's not any good. To me, I'd probably look at maybe a 3-year extension that would put him on 5 years again. He's not making anywhere close to the most money in the Big Ten right now.
He's not making Bill Cubitt money at $1.2 million.
Exactly. If you put him up to work, Tracy Clays is getting like $1.75 million.
He's got to be making. He's got to be making that.
To raise.
Yeah,
he's
got to be making more than around that amount. I mean, again, for Minnesota, I think Minnesota's probably getting more revenue out of their program.
Brand new stadium.
Than we're getting out of their program.
Minnesota's facilities are terrible. Well, athletic.
They have a brand new stadium, John, 3 years ago. Built a brand new TNB Bank Field.
It does better with football than we do as a program is concerned. I'm not going to say it's Michigan. It's not, but it does better in that regards. I think he should be in the conversation. And let's be realistic about this. I mean, they've at least got to be somewhat competitive today. There's a lot of open jobs right now.
13 of them.
I'm not saying Kevin Wilson's at the top of everybody's list, but
right.
Somebody would listen to him, wouldn't they?
Well, yeah, and your offensive line coach is the best they've had since I've been here watching him in 69. They need to make sure they keep him too and give him what they do.
Yeah.
To keep him
He's
happy.
One of the top five assistant coaches for this award coming up, and that's pretty amazing at Indiana
University.
For an offensive line.
Coach,
yeah.
Would be reasonable.
He did not make the finalists. He was a semifinalist. The four finalists were announced today. It's like Kirby Smart and the kid from Lincoln Riley from Oklahoma and one others. But to be in the top six or eight
that's
or whatever
fantastic.
That was is great. And I think that's where you have to see the trees, John, not the forest, because it's not as easy as, oh, you've made a bowl game. Now this is what happens every year. There's a reason you got to a bowl game, because you gave the staff time, because you didn't fire them all last year,
right.
Because you were patient. You let it develop. You let it grow. You've let it recruit.
Now you have depth and you have some strength.
And there are people that will say, with 2 years left on his contract, why do you need to extend it? Well, I think that's a fair argument, because 2 years is 2 years, and they don't think like high school kids. But nobody works on a deal anymore that gets more than five. You've seen that everywhere. Every new head coach is hired today, yesterday.
Right.
It's all 5 years. It's very standard. And now that he got seven to start with that, I think if you're smart, Indiana football could use a period of continuity.
Absolutely.
You haven't had one. Why not try it? You haven't seen it really. The only bad season Kevin Wilson had is when he lost two quarterbacks in 3 plays at Iowa.
Yeah. Hey, that's been my argument for a while now.
How many years do you give him then?
Well, he has two more after this one.
I'd give him three.
I'd give him a three-year extension.
Total five.
Yeah. Again, Indiana's making enough money that a buyout, if
and
it had to come to that,
he's not paid enough money where there's going to be a buyout that's going to hurt
you. It's not
you.
Tom Crean buyout money at the time. And by the way, back to Greg Fry real quickly. They've got to pay him some money. I mean, they've got
to
step up now. They already are,
sure.
But they've got
to
step up because he's going to get a lot of offers.
What is he making now, roughly?
I don't know.
He's not making more than $350. I know that.
No, but it's
not making as much as the defensive coordinator, right?
No, I think Latrell might have been making $500 before he left.
Latrell took a pay cut to go to Carolina.
The good news here is we might not be able to compete with the big boys for Greg Fry for money wise, but if you got a family and you spend a few years in Bloomington, it looks awfully good to your family. So,
I'm pretty sure he married a Bloomington girl, John, just a couple years ago, and she's got some kids here and high school kids. So that plays into.
Let's
that
go
stuff.
Ahead and step up and pay him some money to be competitive. And then
but if Florida walks in the door with 1.2, he's a Florida State guy.
Exactly
Jimbo
right.
Fisher walks in with $800,000, $900,000, says, I need you.
We can't compete with the biggest, but we can be reasonable and put a good offer out there.
I understand all that, but you guys are making a lot of sense. I like what you're saying.
Well, then we shouldn't be on talk radio. Sorry.
No, you actually
apologize.
Need to be, because your island is a sanity and a bunch of idiots.
We try, John. Thanks for the phone
good
call, buddy.
Always,
we appreciate
John.
It.
You pay attention on this program, and we'll get you on there.
Not surprising. There weren't a lot of huge highlight players on the IU defense. Nick
Mangieri
was very good. Marcus Oliver had a great
Marcus
season.
Marcus Oliver was the first player in 6 years to have 100 tackles.
Did not expect to get any awards today on the defensive side, but they did announce kicker of the year, and it's Griffin Oaks.
That's
so
no surprise.
Congratulations.
At all time.
He had a great last 2 years.
Single season record this year, 23 field goals.
Fantastic
and
kicker.
Remember, what did Kevin Wilson harp on all year long? We're not going to win kicking field goals. He made a bunch.
You got to kick some field goals.
Well, that's my point. And the kid does it. The good news was the philosophy is right, but when you have a guy you can lean on from inside of 55 yards, that gives you some freedom.
You don't have to try every 52-yarder you see. You don't. But when you get inside 35, 40-yard field goals, you want to take some points.
Look at how many he missed this year. It's not too many. So congratulations, Griffin.
Remember, Michigan was the game we were kicking all those field goals. And
that one would have been good from 75. It was up the net.
It kept us in it. I mean, there's a lot of points, but at the end of the day, four field goals will still help you get there.
Two touchdowns.
Got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is a phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. You're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is the phone number. Again, leading you up to 7:45 when we hand it over to pregame coverage of Monday Night Football. Baltimore at Cleveland tonight. Hoosiers wrap up their season 6-6. It is not one that's going to go down in the Big Ten Elite series on television.
But it will here on campus.
But it will be a bowl game for the Hoosiers, and I believe this will be their 10th bowl game of all time. And again, it's not a normal thing for this program. Winning football seasons is not a normal thing over the history, so you have to like the fact that even at 6-6 and 500, you got the bucket and you're going bowling, and that's a pretty damn good place to be today for an IU football fan.
And after 5 years, that's what you'd expect from the hire that was brought in.
That's right.
And the patience that was shown, that some people that weren't very happy last year. But if you couldn't understand that playing a third string quarterback for five games, it's not named JT Barrett, doesn't work in this league, it's a little bit different. It is not apples and oranges here. That's the thing you have to realize.
Look, I've looked at this, I've talked about this before. I can point to some mistakes that Kevin Wilson and his crew have made, especially in the recruiting side of things, that might have caused this to go on a little longer. But in fairness, recruiting at Indiana is hard. It's not easy to get great recruits where you're using a lot of those guys and they're building the depth. That part of it is hard, and that's why I continue to preach the patience part of it, even with the way the defense is playing right now. So I think an extension is imminent at this point, and certainly the bowl bid is imminent. And look, the team needs the extra time. It needs the extra practices. It needs the notoriety. Again, not talked about a lot is for teams like this that don't go to bowl games a lot, you get treated like a king for a week and a half,
well,
whatever
even
it
better.
Is. It's fun. It's neat. And guys can get that most other places. And if they can't get it at Indiana, it makes a difference. It's a little goodie bag and some extra meals and some banquets and crap.
That ESPN,
but it's fun.
ESPN owns all these bowl games. And for 12 hours of the day, your bowl game, you are the featured presentation.
Absolutely.
If you played the day after Christmas at the Pinstripe Bowl in New York, guess what happened on Christmas Day? Three NBA games. That's it.
Yeah.
There ain't a whole lot else to talk about. So you get essentially an infomercial, a travel log, a selling point of your program, and you don't at 5-7. You don't at 4-8.
It could
be close, but you don't.
The days of a bowl game, meaning you're on a beach in Florida or California, are gone.
Yes, they are.
The bowl games are everywhere, and these places are marketing their places.
Are everywhere.
Exactly. Some of them are better than others. There's no question. But it's not always just because you're in Miami versus being somewhere else. Yeah, we'd all love to be in Miami right now. But New York is going to be a great experience for these kids if that's where they end up going.
Or San Francisco or Nashville or wherever it could be.
Exactly
The bowls will be announced a week from yesterday, so they'll be on the 6th after all the championship games are over, and the big boys get to deal the cards first and pick and choose who they'd like, and depending on who goes where, who beats who, and who picks who for what New Year's Day games, then all the cards fall after that. So if you know how the Michigan State-Iowa game is going to end, great. If you know how this game is going to end and that game is going to end, great. There are things that matter. That's why we're not going to sit here and tell you Indiana is going to the blank bowl. It's so obvious.
Look,
that's not the case.
The first bowl that my dad went to at Northern was not their best season. They went to San Jose.
They did.
And in the first quarter of the game, the power went out all around the stadium, and we couldn't watch the first quarter of the game on television because the power went out because of the rainstorm they were out in there. It was a cruddy night, but it was a great experience for the kids. None of them had ever been anywhere.
Sure.
I mean, for a lot of these kids. I mean, because let's be fair, for Northern Illinois, especially, you're recruiting a lot of inner-city Chicago,
right.
Some of the inner cities and things like that. These kids haven't been out of the city much less
the experience.
State. They get to go all the way to San Francisco and get to see Alcatraz and Chinatown and all these sorts of things.
And that's why we get mad at them.
The kids want
that's why we get mad at the kids who don't get it and get arrested. in the parking lot across from Assembly Hall, because they get to do a lot of things that the informatics student doesn't get to do.
Doesn't get to do and, for free.
For free. And the chemistry student and the history student, they don't always get to do that. That's what makes it neat, because it is. Why do you think all these, any intercollegiate sport schedules the out-of-town trip? It's part of the college experience. It's not always about winning and losing. It's about being the experience. And as your dad will tell us next Monday when he's sitting right next to you in the studio, the first guys that went that were freshmen and sophomores, the next time they went, and the next time they went,
that's right.
And, and then they passed that down,
right.
And that's what, you know what that's called? A program.
Well, and
that's the next step.
It's exactly right. It's experience,
that's the next
and
step.
It becomes the attitude of the program.
It becomes the expected.
It's exactly
what
right.
you have to do to get there. Now it's, you can sit and yell in the weight room on January 13th to your purple. You can sit in the sand pit on July 25th and scream about
your
what it takes
what you got them to do
until you do it.
Right.
Then everybody remembers that, oh, I was in there at 6 a.m. on January 13th. Mm-hmm. Oh, I was in the sand pit. It was 103 on July 26th, and I went to Nashville for a bowl game. So anybody that thinks that's not a good idea, then the players start handling that.
Right.
The coaches don't. The strength guys don't have to. The players start handling that. Mm-hmm. And that's the layer of trust, and that's the layer of expectation that you can't just do by yelling, writing it on a whiteboard, putting it on a sign outside the locker room once the kid's by.
Right.
That's the key, man, and this is the first step.
And I say
that's why it's exciting.
There are a lot of bowl games. Everybody gets cynical about that. Perfectly understandable as fans.
There's 41 of them.
I get that. but the kids, because there are so many now, especially whether it's national television or whether it's a bowl game, it's expected nowadays. It wasn't 20 years ago. It was unusual. Bill Mallory went 500 one year, over 500 one year.
Ask Tennessee why they've had
missed out on a couple big wins and didn't go bowling because Michigan got a bowl bid down in Florida and they picked them over us. And we did not get a bowl game that year. And we were over 500. So, I mean, this hasn't always been the case.
Ask Tennessee why they've had four coaches and since Philip Fulmer's been gone. Why? Because we're not going to bowl games anymore.
Yeah,
that's
exactly
the expected part of it. Ask,
and that's a minimum.
Sure. Places like Arkansas. Places like UCLA has gone through this. USC has been either real high or real low, and they're trying to find something to get out of it. Those programs that expect it don't give that length of time to get it right.
And if you want a short-term version of what happens if you don't get to do it, look at the way Christian Hackenberg has been beat up the last 2 years.
There you go.
Because Penn State's a national championship program, and they had their issue and had to go through probation situations. They got
Rutgers.
Their offensive line's the worst it's ever been.
Rutgers has had other problems lately, but they were in bowls at what,
nine out of 10 years.
Illinois, a traditional football program.
Back and forth here, in and out. Yep.
And again.
Yeah.
So the grass is somewhat greener, but it's not as green as the blue bloods. But Indiana's on the right direction. And if you don't buy into that, I'm not sure what else the program can do to prove it to you at this moment. You can't win seven games if you don't play one more.
Let's let Georgia be cynical and fire their coach after another
9-3
season. We can be happy about 6-6, take this bowl game and look toward the future and what it could mean. Got to take another quick break. 333-2665 is our phone number. Back in just a couple minutes. Dave and Glass with you in the Zone. You're back in the Zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. Trying to find out here the football teams as they've been announced. The first team defense was announced along with all the defensive award winners. Again, Griffin Oaks is the Big Ten kicker of the year.
Hear, hear.
Well deserved. He had a great year for the Hoosiers.
Season record, most field goals made.
Did not see any Hoosiers on the first team defense.
Not surprised.
Insert cynicism here, I suppose. It's not a surprise. Nick Mangieri was fantastic. Marcus Oliver was fantastic.
He was.
I would expect them to be on the second or third team at the very least.
Yeah, one guy kind of flew under the radar too. I thought Zach Shaw had a really good year.
He did.
He was
hustled, no question. I think he's going to mean more to us than he will to the national or area media, certainly, because we saw him all the time. But not surprising. I mean, the defense didn't produce, so you're not going to see a lot of defenders
up there.
You should
see Fant because of his pass breakups. Yeah,
I would think you'd see him up there.
In the second team, I would think.
Offense gets announced tomorrow again. My opinion is Nate Sudfeld has to be in the running for the quarterback of the year. There is a Offensive Player of the Year award, and I would think that might be your Connor Cook or your C.J. Beathard if you want to split the hairs here and put Sudfeld into one of them.
Those two get split for those two awards.
Exactly.
That could happen. Don't be surprised when it doesn't work out Indiana's way is our point.
Yeah, Sudfeld's numbers are fantastic. He's going to be second or third team quarterback at worst.
But you know winning.
His numbers are every bit as good, if not better, than the other two and with fewer options. But you know how that works, as we said. 333-2665 is the phone number. Got a little short area here, but before we hit the top of the area, the Colts returned to play and did so against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but did so without their quarterback, of course, who's out for a few more weeks, Andrew Luck. Matt Hasselbeck, all he did was go to 4-0. Quarterback controversy? Of course not. Matt Hasselbeck is 40, but I'll tell you what, the offense has at least moved pretty darn well because he's getting rid of the ball quickly and they're making sure that he's got the options to do so.
And Rob Chudzinski did that. His first days in charge, took that big fat playbook and chopped it in an eighth. And everybody's confident with their roles. When you don't have to worry about running 15 routes, you got to run three. Yeah. You run them a lot crisper, and it makes Hasselbeck's job a lot easier. There's not a lot of confusion there. The Colts haven't ran the ball the last 2 weeks for any kind of numbers at all. One game on the road, one game at home. They won both of them. They're not running the ball. They're going to make Hasselbeck beat you. Go ahead and rip off his numbers. 315 yards passing yesterday. Three touchdowns. No picks yesterday. Yeah, two last game. Okay.
And now Ahmad Bradshaw's lost with a broken wrist. But I'll tell you what, on the defensive side of things.
He's done for the year. He has been put on.
On the defensive side of things, I think the defense has been playing just lights out. You know, it hasn't been perfect by any stretch, but there's a physicality and there's an attitude going around out there on that team. And they are flying around like they didn't earlier in the season.
How many points did they give up in the second half yesterday?
That's zero. A great question. Was it zero?
Zero. Yeah. None. Nil. Nothing.
Yeah.
You had sacks from Cole. You had sacks from Walden, guys that have had no sacks.
That's exactly right.
And remember that Tampa Bay line against Philadelphia the week before gave up nothing. Colts got five of them yesterday.
Yep.
God, Sir Cheryl is playing right tackle. Please make a note.
Yeah. Yep, and did a pretty good job with a rookie offensive tackle the Colts did, considering he's never played before. Doesn't
that
sound
offensive
good, so.
Line, we'll tell you about it next hour, how this team won.
Yeah.
It's not surprising they didn't rush the ball, how they won with that agglomeration of players.
Yeah.
Give Hasselbeck even some more credit.
Absolutely. Got to take a quick break. Then we'll be back after the top of the hour, so don't go anywhere. Dave and Glass will be in the zone. Back in the zone, in the red zone, with Dave and Glass here on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is our phone number. We'll start covering some IU basketball here in a little while. They're up 12-0 early in this game here against Alcorn State. It's been all IU, as you might expect so far.
Alcorn State, just if you're just joining us, 0-5 on the year and in the bottom 10 in offensive and defensive efficiency categories nationwide.
So they're consistent.
And they've just scored their first basket 3.5 minutes in.
So we'll talk a little more about IU and especially their trip to Maui here shortly. But before we do that, we want to put a bow on a very nice win.
Yeah, it was
for 40-year-old
very solid.
Matt Hasselbeck and a little bit of everything. I mean, you had good defense, good special teams. You had excellent offense, and it's important to point out the upheaval that's had to happen, or at least some of it, on the offensive line. They moved Jonathan Harrison back into the center position a couple weeks ago, and to his credit, he's proven me wrong, at least in the running game. He has eliminated some mistakes. He's good for one really bad snap of some sort every game, but it's really it's gotten the run game working a little bit better. It didn't work particularly well yesterday,
and they still
won. 26 carries, 27 yards with 40-year-old Matt Hasselbeck. You'd like to have more than that, but I think that points to what they were able to do, and especially with the defense. When you hold a team to 12 points in the NFL, you're going to be in great position, especially if you've got the weapons that the Colts do.
Yep, and the Colts had some fortune go their way, some bad penalties as well that helped out. But, hey, that's part of the game. That was the third lowest rushing yards in franchise history. So this wasn't just an oops performance. This was really bad statistically. And with a 40-year-old quarterback, if the angle for Lovie Smith's defense was, we're going to make Hasselbeck throw the ball and beat us. He did.
He did, absolutely.
And he threw for 315 yards.
42 attempts.
And completed, what, 27 of them, 26
26,
of them?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty solid. How many picks?
None.
Yeah. And if you had told me before the game started that your offensive line would line up this way, left tackle Joe Wrights. I'd be stopping right there. You want to know the other four guys?
Well, you lost Anthony Costanzo as your best player to begin with.
That's my point. Joe Wrights is playing left tackle for you against a team that just walloped Philadelphia.
Well, it's interesting to begin with that 11 games into the season, they would decide to go with an offensive tackle they just drafted this year in the sixth round, has been inactive all year long in Denzel Good.
From Mars Hill.
Has not played, again, a lick all year long. They decided that their best move with Anthony Costanzo out was not to mess up the interior because they finally got the interior playing halfway decently in the run game.
So they
instead they flop the tackle over and they don't put Harriman's back in and do something with the veteran
or Lance Lewis
with I think they did a little bit last week on
tried.
They went ahead and they put the rookie in there and the rookie did pretty darn well.
Jack Muhort stayed at left guard. Hugh Thornton was at right guard. Harrison came into play center.
And Harrison's been there for a few weeks now.
Those are the only players, no subs, 100% of the snaps. 40-year-old quarterback who is not the most mobile guy in the pocket, doesn't bail you out and run for first downs, like 12 does. So that's the point. The point was, that's a fantastic job by a line that was abused and beaten up in a handful of games this year that got their quarterback where he is now, and that's injured.
Yeah.
So to have these guys come out and perform and win and to have Matt Hasselbeck keep winning games is unbelievable. And the Colts defense has to get credit as well. That's again, Tampa entered the week. No sacks last week against Philadelphia. They route them this week. Colts get five of them. Some guys that you brought in for big money, hoping that they would provide some more of that, finally registered. And the NFL is such an interesting soap opera week to week because it doesn't have to all work one week or the next week. You just kind of want some consistency in there because you let your big game players make the big plays. And who was the big player yesterday? Well, T.Y. Hilton catches two touchdown passes, right?
Yeah.
No balls in the first half. Nothing.
Yeah.
They're doing absolutely nothing. Dante Moncrief, half of his catches are for first downs.
Yeah.
The Colts found a way with a terrible offensive line, a defense who had been better, really nice against the Falcons, but the Falcons weren't very good.
Yeah.
They showed you that yesterday. Their offense isn't very good. And the Colts are on top of the league, 6-5, tied with Houston. But that, again,
well, suddenly,
winning in Houston, that counts.
Suddenly counts winning every week becomes very important because of this Houston resurgency on their defense. And we still have to go down to Houston. Is that correct? No, we got Houston at home.
Here. They've already won
Jacksonville,
there.
Jacksonville, Tennessee at home, at Pittsburgh next week. So that's a tough game
the
here.
The Colts.
They've got to keep winning. They've got to keep doing it with a 40-year-old quarterback. And they've got to do it with some of these decent money guys that they brought in. Doing much. Andre Johnson caught one pass and hasn't done much this year.
Oh, he's done.
Harriman's has been inactive all the time. You lost Art Jones and now Henry Anderson are both out on the defense. You know, Mike Adams has been in and out of the lineup with some injuries here. Earlier in the year, it was some cornerbacks. Ahmad Bradshaw's broken wrist. He's out for the rest of the year now. You've brought back both of the running backs that backed him up that you had let go, and Boom Heron and Zerlin Tipton. I hate to say they're doing it with smoke and mirrors because they're not. They're doing it with good protection on a quarterback that doesn't have to hold it very long, which is different way that they played earlier in the season, but they're still getting a lot of guys involved. And the reason for that, of course, is they have a lot of skill guys available. They've got a lot of good players there. And what's been key, extremely key to this team, we mentioned it off air, Dante Moncrief, I keep saying it every week, he has been fantastic this year.
Eight catches for 117.
He's never going to be the target of the defense like T.Y. Hilton is, because you got to put your money on Hilton, and the Colts have put their money in Hilton. But Dante Moncrief is a guy that didn't have humongous numbers in Mississippi. He's a great talent, but he didn't have huge numbers. The question with Dante, how would he react to the suddenly very crowded room he was in, and how fundamentally would he develop? Because he still needed to develop fundamentals. And I pointed this out on Twitter during the game. He caught a ball the other day with a great release off the line. He didn't get touched. And then he makes a phenomenal cut to absolutely lose a defender to catch another first down pass. It's about fundamentals, and it's about making a bunch of big plays for them. And not all of them are 70-yard touchdowns. They're first downs. And those are key when you're trying to keep your defense off the field and keep the other team's offense off.
Here's some interesting numbers for you from the Indianapolis Star. Since Rob Chudzinski took over as a play caller, Andre Johnson, he played 42% of the snaps against Denver that week. The next week against the Falcons, he played 48% of the snaps, and he played 33% of the snaps against Tampa yesterday. Before that, week six, New England, 85%. The next week against the Saints, 92%.
Well, they did a lot more two
and
tight ends.
And week eight against Carolina. Well, that's my point. Chudzinski has, and then
they've gone back to more tight ends.
It goes
and
to your
power
point,
looks.
And it goes to your point that Moncrief is playing instead of Johnson. And Johnson, he signed for 3 years, $21 million.
Moncrief deserves it. I mean, that's the thing. And we can talk about Ryan, you know, Grigson and all that sort of thing later. But
he did draft him. He brought them all in.
Yes, he did.
He brought them all in.
Yes, he did. But Dante Moncrief has seized that job.
Yeah.
And for a young player like that, that is so great to see because again, he walked into a crowded room with some veterans used to making money and getting catches and making plays. And yes, a couple younger guys also, but there was a lot of the personalities potentially in that. We wondered about that and he reacted absolutely perfectly.
And the Colts win. They head to Pittsburgh on Sunday Night Football, 7:30 pregame. Bob Lamy gives you a full hour before the Colts and Steelers get together. Pittsburgh losing 39-30 in Seattle on the weekend.
Got to take another quick break. Hoosier basketball winning 21-6 over Alcorn State, heading towards the second TV timeout. We'll talk some IU basketball when we get back. 333-2665 is the phone number. Dave and Glass are the In the Zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 333-2665 is the phone number. Clearly, the football season in most areas is coming to a close, but we do have an important note for you as this Saturday we've got two of the college championship games, the SEC championship game, which is Alabama and Florida, and then the Big Ten championship game, which is Michigan State and Iowa. And, of course, the winner of that game is all but assured of going to the NCAA playoff or the college football playoff, and Alabama expected to win would also end up in the playoff. So we've got those two for you.
They're
this Saturday.
18-point favorites if you're scoring at home.
Well, and Florida can't score.
They
which
scored
is not new.
Two but, against Florida State.
On Sunday, we have the Colts at Pittsburgh with a 7:30 pregame for that. And then this Thursday night, we've got Packers at Lions starting here at 8 o'clock. But we also have high school basketball starting up this Friday night. That's right. South at Bedford. Chalk Talk at 7 o'clock and tip off at 7:30 for that.
The 67th year of high school sports on the airwaves. Pretty cool stuff there. Joe Smith, John Callahan, all your action from North Lawrence.
So we start that off to replace the high school football and still a little bit of college football coming up. But moving over to college basketball, the Hoosiers are up 30-15 with just under 9 minutes left to go over Alcorn State. It has been relatively a cruise at this point in time, as you would expect, but it was no cruise. It was actually a plane flight out to Maui. And look, 1-2 isn't necessarily shocking with some of the teams they could have played out there, but not with the teams they did play out there. I don't think a lot of people thought Wake Forest would come out and punch the Hoosiers in the mouth, and perhaps
punch them in the mouth.
Perhaps worse was for the last game to get punched in the mouth again. And look, I don't think it's inaccurate at this point in time to make that sound like it's kind of a lost vacation type week. What the heck is going on? Because this was a very unselfish team that hit the boards really hard, and it just looked like it went out there and played on the beach for a few days and enjoyed the beach too much.
Well, as we mentioned, leading up to that, the level of opponent was going to get a little bit better. Maybe not because of the rankings, but maybe because they have Power 5 athletes.
Yeah.
Guys that can
run. I mean,
run.
We went for a couple of the guys on UNLV's team.
Guys
two of their pick guys.
Yeah, good
we
luck.
And Zimmerman, yeah.
And they have guys that run just as fast as Yogi, jump just as high as Troy, and have just as much meat on their bones as Thomas Bryant. And the other part of that is they're not afraid of Indiana. Indiana played all their games, Dave, at home. This was a neutral court. Mm-hmm. Sure, the Hoosiers had the most fans there. I get all that. I understand all that. Danny Manning was won national championship, played in the pros. Chris Mullins going to a Final Four, played in the pros. Mm-hmm. You think they were going to be worried about any kind of fear or anything else? No, that's what small-time programs do. Small-time programs that you pay $1 million or $200,000 to show up on a Tuesday night in November.
And jerk around with because it's now a 9-point lead down from an earlier 18-point lead.
If you don't put teams away.
Make it 12.
It's all James Blackman Jr. He's lighting the place on fire. But if you let decent teams hang around, decent teams have belief. And you know what else they have? They have players that can play. And you saw, it's just Indiana didn't get off the plane in Maui and wasn't better than everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
They were against Eastern Illinois. They were against Austin Peay. They were against Bellarmine. They were against Ottawa or whoever it was. They were. Mm-hmm. They knew it. But when you got off the plane against an ACC team, a Mountain West team, even St. John's, who, again, team. It's Big East. That's all St. John's does is play basketball. And St. John's, St. John's didn't return. They returned 4% of their scoring, 6% of their rebounding.
Yeah.
And you,
a whole bunch of seniors.
Why? Because guys at that level can play. And you can't out-talent everybody. You can out-talent Bellarmine. You can out-talent the Ohio Valley.
Mm-hmm.
You can out-talent some of the smaller leagues in there. But at some point, they have seniors and juniors at practice all week, too.
Well, what frustrates me the most about the trip was, and I think it's
the
indicative
of my performance was
the
frustration
attitude.
Part. It wasn't the schedule. Well, it was the performance.
With, I want to say, 7 or 8 minutes left to go in the Wake Forest game, perhaps even
less. Yeah, 9-point lead.
Yeah, they took a lead in that game. I can remember it being 5 at one point.
It was 9.
And they got to
8:56
yeah,
was 9.
They got to that point. I mean, they had to come from behind to get there because they were behind at half. They started out the second half very, very well.
Led by,
they
were plus 14 at one point in the second half.
They worked their butts off to get to that point, and then there was a timeout, I think, by Danny Manning at that point, and they walked out of that timeout, and I don't know that I saw it walking out, but from that point forward, it was all right back to Wake Forest pounding them again. And look, there are teams that are going to out-physical this team based on what its makeup is right this minute. There just are. It's not a strong team. But the problem is a few of them are going to be in the Big Ten. And the other problem is it seems at times like that effort just goes away. There are times when they hit the boards hard and times when they don't. And that's the frustrating part to
me. And Tom Crean said after the game, hey, we got to coach better. We got to sub better. We got to put this team in better situations. If a guy is killing you and you're giving up layups all day long, you're allowed to switch to zone. Mm-hmm. You're allowed to mix it up. You're allowed to try different things.
And we saw some zone against UNLV, but
that was late down, at that point. That was down the road.
Yeah.
But the point was, in the press conference, Tom Crean comes out and says, yeah, we're still waiting for one of our guys to stop him from going left. Mm-hmm. You know, they gave up 18 points to one kid in the first half and then 20 in the second half to the left-handed kid.
So maybe put somebody in there to guard
the guy. But
the
point was they couldn't get across in 15 minutes of basketball to anybody, fifth-year transfer senior, freshman,
mm-hmm.
that this guy's going left and here's how you stop it.
Yeah.
That's Wake Forest.
Right.
A team that was picked in the bottom three or four.
Yeah, I mean, if you're losing at halftime because the kid who nobody knows goes absolutely nuts and scores 18 points and he doesn't even average double digits in a game anyways, okay. I mean, I think you deal with that. You accept the fact that he did that. You don't like it, but that's not going to happen all the time. But when you let the guys that you know what they're going to do and how they're going to do and that they're going to get the ball a lot, you let them continually get to their comfort zones and let them do what they want to do, that is an enormous problem. That's a fundamental issue of the defense. It has been from day one.
You don't take anything away from it.
Well, from a strategic point, I'm not sure they're not trying to take away from him because he's talking about taking away the left hand of the guy, and they're not doing it.
Yeah.
I've watched James Blackman for a year and a half now, and he just does not take seriously having to get out on dribble or outside of the 3-point line. He's just not serious about getting through the screens, and he's not the only one. I mean, I pick on him because it's obvious with him and his talent level is high enough it should be better, but he's not the only one that does that.
But you
got to take that seriously.
Yes, you do. And James Blackman's never been a reaction guy. He always has the same look on his face that bothers some people because he doesn't get fired up or he doesn't get angry.
I don't care if he's fired up. I care that he breaks
the
goes
point
through the
is,
screen.
James Blackman's job at Indiana University is to stretch defenses and score points. Mm-hmm. It'd be nice if he was Kobe Bryant, was all first-team league defender.
They don't have to be all first-team defenders.
My point
they
is,
they got
to
be better.
You wanted Roy Hibbert to be tough for the Pacers for 7 years. It didn't happen.
Yeah, well, exactly.
But that's
trying to change his
stripes. That's part of it. Some of these guys said, I've never guarded anybody for 15 years of organized basketball. Coach can yell at me all he wants. I'm making my money shooting threes.
Right.
And he does a good job of
that's
that.
What doing.
But you have to have recruits and other players that do that job then. You can't have all the same players doing it. And the other thing that bugs you, and we're going to get to Travis here in 1 second. Give me 1 second, Travis. The one thing that bugs you about the Maui trip is simple. Hey, Wake Forest lost practice after midnight, lost the gym time because we're too busy watching film. Tell me how many minutes you led against UNLV. Go ahead.
Not many.
Zero.
There you go.
None. Yeah, that's what happened. So, again, at some point, you got to figure this stuff out against better competition. You're going to beat a lot of teams because you're taller, faster, and stronger than them. That's not the case in Power 5 conferences. Travis is on line one. Travis, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, good. How are you guys doing?
Good, buddy.
Doing
thanks
well.
For calling. How have you been? We haven't heard from you in a while. It must be basketball season.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a – well, I'm not a
a Tom Crean fan as a coach. I think at best he's maybe a C-plus kind of guy on his good days. But the thing that I just, and you've been talking about it, but it's so frustrating that the fundamentals are just not there. And these guys, what they don't want to play defense consistently. And he won't. He's got a bench. They can ride the pine. I don't care what they were coming out of high school, because you've got those kids at every team. You know, every team, well, almost every team got a five-star kid or two or three four-star kids or whatever. But they're moving up where the people you're playing are more on your level.
Absolutely.
And you've got to step it up. And
you can't give away possessions. You saw it against Wake Forest. You saw it in the last 90 seconds against Wake Forest. Yogi comes down, no pass three. Bielefeld shooting a three-pointer in the corner with 90 seconds left to go.
Yeah.
Those aren't good decisions by anybody.
I can't remember which one it was, which game it was, but about the first 9 seconds we had a turnover.
That's all of them.
And
that's kind of Troy's go-to, I think.
It's what happens, and hopefully he gets him out of the way early. Travis, we're up against it, brother. We got to let you go, but good stuff. But you saw in the end of the Wake Forest game, you take two timeouts to heaven with you, and the last 4 or 5 minutes, they just kept. You didn't run one play to stop this guy. You didn't run one play to get a solid set on offense. Mm-hmm. Yogi pulls up and hits a three and makes it. Or I'm sorry, drives the lane and makes it. Comes down, no pass, pull up three. Next time down, it's Bielefeld in the corner, air ball missed by 5 feet.
Right.
Well, those aren't things you can do against. You can do that against Alcorn State. You can't do that in Wake in the last 3 minutes.
Again, I don't disagree with any of that. I see a lot of bad decisions if you go possession by possession in college basketball.
I'm not worried about college basketball.
I understand that. I'm just saying this does not seem indicative. That does not seem indicative of Indiana. What seems indicative of Indiana recently is that they talk a lot about wanting to be better on the boards and wanting to take care of the ball better in transition and in the half court, and that they want to defend the ball better, and then they don't. And I said this at the end of the last year. It does not seem to be getting through. Now, how often it's talked about, again, a lot of people are saying Tom Crean doesn't emphasize it. I don't know that I buy that.
Tom Crean said in practice it's great. He can't figure out why it doesn't translate to the game.
It's not getting through. And at the end of the day, you're judged on whether it gets through in games and whether you win those games. That becomes the ultimate judgment. And when you're 1-2 in Maui, it didn't get through. Got to take a quick break. 333-2665 is our phone number. Dave and Glass with you in the zone. All right, you're back in the zone with Dave and Glass on News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL. 3.5 minutes to go in the first half over at Assembly Hall. Indiana is up 42-28 against Alcorn State. So the defense is, it's not a good shooting night for Alcorn State, but they're still putting in the points.
Oh, don't worry, it never is for
Alcorn
State.
They have 10 offensive rebounds on 18 misses so far. So this is one of those nights. Hoosiers not really hitting the defensive boards here. They are hitting everything they're shooting. They're 16-22 shooting the ball. James Blackman has 17 first half points on 6 of 7 shooting, so it's efficient. They do have 13 assists. So again, on the offensive side, sharing the ball, they have 6 turnovers. I would not characterize it so far as being wild and out of control most of the time. And we all understand they're going to have a few of those, I think, a game. But how many is the determiner? But are you, again, it's Alcorn State. We're going to win. But are you concerned after all that talk that they're not hitting the boards a little harder than they are?
No, because one game's not going to solve it. And, again, it's Tigers and Stripes and everything else.
You have to start an upward arc with, an upward arc? I mean, don't you have to start that direction? It seems like going down from where you were in that regards isn't the right way to get back up.
After Wake Forest and St. John's, where they didn't play very well, and you're going to shake these things up and practice and do all this, they never led against Las Vegas. Yeah. So you just expect the switch to flip, and this is going to change?
Well, against Alcorn State, you could.
This is a work in progress, Dave. This is they're having a problem, as Tom mentioned in his press conference.
Is this
yesterday.
One of those we want them to be better in March than they are in November?
He's saying that it's he doesn't understand why it's happening, because it happens in the practice gym. It just hasn't transferred to the court yet. So you'd hope that it would just be a dominating performance. But maybe the issues lie a little bit deeper. The leadership issue he talked about in August at a speech at Lucas Oil Stadium.
Yeah.
If I had any leaders on this team right now, I would name them.
Yeah.
You don't hear him talking after
Maui. Well, that's
not
going to get solved in a couple months.
After coming back from Maui, you haven't even heard leadership in this direction.
Somebody's
doing
grabbing
this.
Them, yeah.
Somebody's taking the teams. Well, that's not what – when you go 1-2 in Maui, that's because it didn't happen. Right. That's why. Right. So the issue for this team is the shooting going to paper over the cracks? And on nights they don't shoot it very well or make very good decisions, they're going to get beat. Or is this part of the growing up phase that they're hoping that they all learn and grow together, and at some point in February or March, they've got it all figured out and all the pieces come together? From my opinion, and this is all this is, show me a team in the last 6 years that has finished February and March strongly for Indiana basketball. I can't point to one.
No.
They finished 5-10 last year.
Again, in 2013, they won the Big Ten, and they had a couple.
They
had a couple very important performances, including on the road. But I wouldn't say that
they had a couple chances to clinch at home and did not.
I wouldn't say it was definitive one way or another.
No, they didn't. They struggled with Temple. They struggled with in the second round. Again, it wasn't a team that was firing in all cylinders where you said, hey, oh, I got it. They finally put it all together. And again, the journey sometimes is more fun than the destination.
This isn't much fun right now.
And that's the next thing that needs to fix. And if it's not being fixed, you can't go out and buy free agents. You can't go out and sign contracts. You just have to kind of go with what you've got. Whether you like it or not, well, that's something that the bench can help you get attention to. That's something that how do you get a kid to play harder, Dave? We'll ask your dad next Monday.
I mean, you got to get their attention.
How do you get their attention? This is a game you would use as an attention getter, I would think.
I would think so.
Victory at home. You want to use it at Duke?
Well,
I don't think so.
I don't think this game gets anybody's attention for Duke. You know, the funny part about that is, let's be fair, I just don't think the team pays a lot of attention to a lot of their opponents. And Duke will get their attention because everybody knows Duke who Duke is. Nobody knows who UNLV or Wake is. That's half the problem.
And if that's the issue, Wisconsin stinks, Ohio State stinks, so there's no point in even getting ready for those teams because they're terrible.
Hey, folks, music means we got to head on out of here. Stay tuned. We'll turn you over to Westwood One's pregame for Ravens at Browns here shortly, and we will talk to you Wednesday. You've been in the zone.